All right, we're in C++ world again. Boris, how are you doing?
Good, good. How are you, Charles?
Great. So last time we talked, we sort of went down a little rabbit hole about games.
Yes.
And the need to make it easier to do this and that.
Yeah.
And so the time has come.
Yeah. Now we're showing off some of the things we've built.
Excellent. And we have a developer in the room who has not been on Channel 9 before.
Hi, Charles.
Introduce yourself. Good. How are you doing?
I'm good. I'm Jean-Pierre, but everybody calls me JP.
Cool.
I've been in Microsoft for 15 years.
Nice.
And I had a long love affair with C++ in the past.
Uh-huh.
I derived C# and XAML for a couple of years. And last year, I got the challenge to go back at C++, and specifically for addressing the need to improve the world of 3D on the Windows platform.
Excellent.
And I was happily surprised that it was still complex after many years of being apart. CBS was still complex. DX was still complex. So Boris and I in a small team, and Mohsen and Craig, sat on a journey to improve the current perspective of how hard it is to write 3D games.
Excellent. Excellent.
Yeah.
So in terms of like what's difficult and now what's easier,
yeah.
Can you elucidate?
I'll see if I can try to summarize. So games are definitely a special kind of app. They're designed differently. We talked a bit about that before, mm-hmm. right? They have a very different design process and a different kind of team behind it, with a strong emphasis on art and design.
Mm-hmm.
And so what that means is you end up having a lot of assets that are not code. I kind of, joke around that for every line of code, you probably have like megabytes or gigabytes of images and models and sound.
Mm.
All those things play a big part. And so it's kind of like for a movie, you've got the script and then you've got all the video, which is much more significant.
Sure.
So on the one hand, we wanted to make sure that that Visual Studio, since it's your development tool of choice, could play a better role working with all those assets that you have in a game, that your colleagues are often building. And on the other end, so that's kind of one piece of the puzzle that we've tried to improve.
Mm.
And then the other end of the spectrum is a very developer-centric problem, which is debugging.
Mm.
Another kind of anecdote I usually tell people is the smallest kind of improvements we make to the debugging experience tend to lead to huge applause from a developer audience, because we end up spending so much of our time debugging.
Okay.
And when you look at game development, debugging is partly the same. Partly it's the same old F5 debugging experience you have in Visual Studio. But there's a whole aspect of it where traditional debugging, we'll call it, hits a brick wall, and developers have no recourse but to go to a completely different set of tools. And the issue there is the GPU.
Mm.
When you're targeting DirectX, or any other kind of GPU-oriented API, so OpenGL would be the same, you're actually preparing a bunch of commands and sending them over to DirectX, which sends them to the GPU, which then executes a rendering pipeline.
Mm.
And all of that execution that occurs on the GPU, which is a programmable thing now, it has shaders that run, which are programs, is opaque to a regular debugger, and therefore to you as a developer.
Mm-hmm.
So what we've tried to do there is really improve the Visual Studio debugging experience by bringing in an ability to capture what happens on the GPU.
Nice.
And inspect all of that historical state to help you understand, well, why did this pixel go blue or go green?
Right? Nice.
So those are the two areas that we've tried to improve.
Excellent. Well, that's huge.
Yeah, we think so.
That's huge. So.
We'll see. That's what we'll tell us.
They will. So, I mean, we're going to probably want to look at some code here and look at some samples.
Sure, yeah.
We could do that. Okay, one of the first thing that struck me is that Visual Studio has kind of omitted to helping out the 3D and the 2D world also. In the 2D world, when you deal with image, we often don't get to see stuff like the transparency of an image, because Visual Studio doesn't offer that. Or doing some large editing of large files. We didn't do that in Visual Studio until the current milestone we've reached, where you can open a large file that could be PNG, DDS files, a TIFF file, and you can actually see transparency now,
okay.
Which you couldn't do before.
Yeah, so this in this
That's
example,
awesome.
Here I'm opening up a DDS file. So a DDS file is a direct draw surface. This is a highly compressed image format designed for DirectX in games.
Okay.
And it includes, it's highly compressed. It has 32 bits of information, so it has alpha transparency information. And we can inspect that now in Visual Studio. So, the old image editor had no idea what this file was, and we've built a completely new image editor to replace the one we had. That gives you the ability to inspect this. And it's got all the things you'd expect from an image editor, including a whole bunch of things we haven't had. Like, I can look at specific channels.
Nice.
Right? And the most interesting one here is the transparency.
Mm-hmm.
So I can bring those back.
You can actually make changes now.
We can edit a compressed image. So when you used to open a PNG in Visual Studio, you couldn't do anything.
Mm.
So whereas in now I can take the paint bucket, or like I'll take a paintbrush here, give it some color, let's give it some blue.
That's good.
And we'll there we go. That'll teach me to use on the fly, and we'll change this thickness to be 20, and now I can, I can draw. And I'm drawing, you might notice, with alpha blending itself. So we're actually, our brush has transparency in it.
Nice.
So this is really quite an improvement for image editing in Visual Studio.
Yes, man.
And at the very least, you can now look at maybe why we talk about, rendering problems. You get pixels that don't come out the right color.
Mm.
A lot of times that might just be the source content is not exactly what you'd expect.
Mm. Or a simple transaction, like, I want to make this file a little bit smaller. I want to reduce it from 2,000 pixels by 2,000 to 100 by 100.
Mm.
And it's taking too much space. So now you can do it. You can save it back.
Yeah, so a common technique in games is to create what they call MIP levels. So here you'll see that we can show you the number of MIP levels and allow you to navigate between the different MIP levels. So think of that as at different resolutions, different amount of detail pre-computed for you, so that the GPU or the CPU doesn't have to do that, scaling, which is costly
sure.
itself. So here I have 11 levels, right? I'll keep the property window, and I can go back into here, and here I'm looking at a 512 by 256. Here I'm looking at a 256 by 128, et cetera, et cetera. And I can, in fact, edit at each one if I really wanted to. So I can make this MIP level have a different behavior if I really wanted to.
It's kind of the old icons, had different levels in there.
Sure.
Yeah, you could think of it as similar to icons.
So what we're offering here is that you can finally see all your image, all the asset that goes into a game, 2D or 3D.
Mm.
You can make modification, adjustment, and inspect some higher level information like the MIP level or even the pixel format.
Nice.
Yeah. So we didn't have that before. This will hopefully help a bunch of people.
Actually, another interesting example here.
Great.
Pixel format, when you think about it again in a game, you might be assuming that it's blue, green, red, alpha, when it's really actually red, green, blue, alpha. Right?
Mm.
So these things are all possible, and we can show you that directly in Visual Studio. Now, JP just mentioned, you can change it, in fact. JP mentioned that we want to allow you to inspect all the kinds of graphics assets you have in a game. And so that's not just images or textures.
That was for 2D and 3D textures.
We also have 3D models, right? So arguably the most common model for most common format for 3D models is Autodesk's FBX format.
Okay.
So we allow you now to directly inspect that format, and you can take a look at it, understand what's going on here. So directly visualize what the model should look like, and to confirm whether you're perhaps rendering it right or wrong. So here I'll open up a more significant sample that we've got.
Just on that note, it's amazing how you write games sometimes and the artists or your assets will go from anywhere from 10 assets to 1,000 assets.
Hmm.
Okay? And sometimes when they're delivered to you, they'll be delivered at numbers. 200 means it's a horse. 201 is a house. 202 is a boat.
Okay.
But just the file names are not helpful. So with this, you're able to inspect them before you start coding against them.
Excellent.
So that's one way also of value that we offer.
So any conversation about, I think, GPU programming would not be complete without a discussion about shaders. I think you can't really exploit, you know, modern hardware without writing to it. And believe it or not, we talk about C++. You've had so many conversations with different members of our team about how C++ is the high-level language to get at the maximum performance. But it's actually nowhere to be seen when it comes to the GPU. The GPU has other languages to help it be successful. And so the language that Microsoft has developed for the GPU is called HLSL, High-Level Shader Language. And we help you again in Visual Studio with this. If you believe it or not, if you loaded up Visual Studio 2010 or 2008 or 2005, and you tried to write some code that is HLSL, you would get the same experience you'd get if you're trying to write a text file. To Visual Studio, that was an external concept. It was not something we had provided any kind of rich support for.
Sure.
Even though it's a major programming language for games.
Yeah.
By some accounts, at least 60% of all game developers use HLSL. And that usage can only grow at this point. So what we've done is admittedly simple, but you know, we've added it, you know, those file types to Visual Studio. We've made them build automatically in Visual Studio using the right compiler so you can change its settings. And you know, we deploy the output next to your application as it should be. And of course, you know, some of the basic things like colorization and outlining.
Nice.
The kind of things you'd expect in code. Yeah. We don't actually have IntelliSense in this release. You're killing me here.
Yeah, sorry, man.
So, you know, we're baby steps here. Baby steps. We didn't take anything away from anyone, but we're starting with baby steps.
But it's awesome that you can do this.
So at least now you can directly program in HLSL in Visual Studio. Now, that is great for most developers. What we wanted to build is on top of that base support, which we think is the core elements of a game. Mm. And we'll get to sound maybe someday. Right now we have, you know, we're staying out of sound for now. Is a way for you to have a more interactive visual experience around shaders. So shaders are these GPU programs. And if you're not doing GPGPU, which is really a small segment of what people do on a GPU today still. Mm-hmm. It's all about effect. It's all about visual effect. It's about giving something a specific kind of feel when you're rendering it. Maybe it's a shadow. Maybe it's kind of a shiny look, a reflection. Those are the kinds of things you're building in shaders. And so we think a lot of that is amenable to a visual design experience as well.
Okay.
So I think what I want to show you here is one last demo of a glimpse of what we're doing here for shaders, which
great.
We haven't shown you. So I'm back in our little model viewer here, and I can move around, pan, you know, all the things you'd expect. I can zoom out, try to understand this thing at scale. I actually also know, you know, what axis I'm dealing with down here. And in order to draw a tank like this, in order to render it, you need textures, of course, and you also need shaders to tell you how to light this correctly. And so we've built a visual shader design experience. Now what that means is, at the end of the day, a shader is HLSL. That is the language which shaders are built in. What we're doing for you here is a higher level view for specifically for pixel shaders. So you'll notice here that I'm zoomed in all the way, and I can still inspect my model here in all its glory and all its directions. But I'm going to go ahead and zoom out, and you'll see that this is actually a much larger surface here. So this graph, this node graph, is our pixel shader design experience. So what that means is, I have different kinds of nodes that determine what is happening here. For example, I'm sampling from a texture. I'm bringing in a constant here and combining it with some of the other elements. So how this helps you design a shader better than if you're just writing code is, I can take this constant value, for example, and change the value. JP, hey, what number should I change to?
Put it to 0.
Put it to 0? Okay.
Yeah, let's go Terminator.
So it's black. So let me move around and come back and see what live preview this will cause. Oh, you'll notice that It's fully chrome. Because, in fact, I was combining a texture effect as well as this reflection effect. And by setting that to zero, I'm effectively canceling out the texture and just taking in this chrome effect. So I can preview that and design that and tweak it until it's just right.
Awesome.
Without having to run my app. And then when I'm happy with this effect, I can just compile it and have it in my game.
So in some sense, is that's an HLSL designer.
Yeah,
surface.
If you want to.
Yeah.
And the things that you're doing are actually changing the code underneath.
Yes.
That you're then compiling.
Yes.
This will generate new HLSL code.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
So that in and of itself is a great...
Yeah,
congratulations.
We're pretty cool.
What we hope to do with this is bring the HLSL complexity, bring the bar down on the complexity of this so that anybody can start writing HLSL effects and get better textures. For instance, I've been coding for a while. I look at HLSL. I don't know. I can't make heads or tail of it. But with this, I was able to do some shaders and use them in my application. So I'm hoping that my experience will translate to customers' experience, that they can get introduced to HLSL and shaders.
Sure.
And start using it.
Yeah, I think we've definitely heard this kind of, in discussing, you get different kinds of feedback from different people. As you well know, I think, Charles, across all your interviews, there's definitely a gamut.
Sure.
There's a range in what people know about a specific topic.
Yeah, yeah.
Versus programming in general and all these kinds of things. And when you talk to people about, I think, 3D app development or game development, they may sometimes be very savvy about programming, but really getting started in some of these niche aspects of coding.
Sure.
So that might be, I think we talked about this last time, there's a whole aspect that you have to learn that is math. And, this is not teaching you math here, nor can we really solve that in a tool like ours.
Mm-hmm.
We may eventually be able to build interesting tools for that too, but there's no doubt that if you're asking me, hey, I want to get into game development,
mm-hmm.
You're going to have to go do a refresher, book or
sure.
practice on certain types of math.
Yeah.
And another thing that we hear is what JP just said, which is shaders are a bit of a black art, a dark art, kind of still. Part of that, I think, is because not enough people have been writing HLSL relative to, C, C sharp, C++.
And it's no good debugger for it, so.
And there's not a great design or debugging experience for it.
Interesting. But now there's a good design experience for it.
And somewhat of a debugger also.
And somewhat of a debugger also, because I was going to ask about that. So, in some sense, the thing that I see here also is for developers who do write games that do know, HLSL, and they spend their time actually implementing the algorithms and the math and the physics, they may not be designers and not know much about the images and the graphic assets. So, the designer can hand off to me. So my question would be, what construct is that I'm looking at in those little chunks of HLSL? Can someone hand me that as an abstraction?
That's one of the scenarios we've been running by for measuring success, is that eventually somebody should be able to acquire a library of shaders, load them up in their project, view them,
mm-hmm.
pick the ones they like, apply them to their models, or modify them and share it back to somebody else.
Excellent.
So you can do all that with this new tool.
That's great. And then do the tweaks, as Boris was showing, to change the color, depth, blah, blah, blah. All that, and as a developer, I might not really be interested in that part because I have to make the game cool.
Yeah.
Right? I have to make it come to life. So
shaders are actually one of those weird intersections of art and dev, because a shader is, like I said, a way to make things look cool.
Yes.
Look cool with good performance. And suddenly now you're back into a developer problem, which is an engineering problem, which is how to write a shader that is both cool and fast that runs on the GPU. And so, an artist may not realize that if they create many, many nodes in this designer, that the performance of that may be weak.
Mm.
It depends. In some situations it might not. In some situations it might. So developers are actually often the ones tasked with creating these shaders.
Okay.
So we hope that they will also enjoy having a visual experience in designing them.
Yeah.
But I think we're going to find both.
So let me ask you this, because
we
don't cover a lot of game stuff on Channel 9.
Right.
Even though we do a lot of native stuff, the canonical example of native coding and dev and stuff is games, but we don't cover it a lot. So I'm definitely ignorant on this end of the table. How are they, in fact, designing these shaders? So when I look at that tank, it's initially an image that somebody's drawn, correct?
A mesh, sure.
It's a mesh, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. Some designer has... So my understanding would be that in a game development studio, as you were saying, you have, like, your crazy Dungeons & Dragons designers that come up with these great characters and stuff, and then you have the people who implement the physics and math behind it. Then they have to meet somewhere in the middle, and that's through HLSL, I'm hearing.
Well, HLSL is think of this as a canvas, a painting you put over a mesh.
Kay.
Like somebody sculpted something, and somebody comes over, I'm going to paint over it and give him a glow or give him a texture of color that I like.
Absolutely.
That's kind of the HLSL aspect of it, the pixel shader, and there's vertex shaders will actually modify the mesh. Mm-hmm. But you're right, there's a conceptual artist that draws on paper and canvas and then paintbrush, and there is the designing engineering type of person who's going to take those art and convert it to mesh.
Okay,
that's an artist, but in the 3D world. And then there's a guy who receives all that, which is the dev, takes the models, put them in his app, and puts it in the right place, and if something's wrong with it, he goes back to the 3D modeler, say, can you modify something and bring it back to me? So at least now you can view the models. And the HLSL is at the end, you apply a texture to it. Sometimes this texture and the pixel shaders, HLSL, comes from the same artist. Mm. Or you could modify them.
Cool.
As a dev, you can apply different textures to a mesh.
Absolutely. And clearly, that's what you're showing us right here. I mean, I could just go and call the 3D artist and say, hey, come here, man.
Yep.
Come to my office. I want to show you something. This looks a little off.
Yep.
And then they could fix it right in Visual Studio.
Well, usually there's a couple of ways doing this. The AAA gamers or companies, they will have a dedicated team and they'll supply you the art, and you have nothing to do with it. You just apply it and you render it and you're done with your game.
And then there's people like JP. I like to joke around with JP. JP was actually a comic book artist in his old life.
Right on.
And so he's one of those developers that's kind of a Renaissance man.
Cool.
He covers the entire spectrum, I think, of art concept to art creation, including in 3D models, all the way to coding.
Awesome, man.
So we're hoping that at least now the gap that was between the mesh 3D designer, the artist that designs the 3D, and the dev, kind of bridge a little bit that gap, get it closer a little bit, so that at least a dev can put in place some cubes, some circles, and get the feeling of how the game will work, and then the artist comes in and replaces those objects with the real thing.
Great.
I would say, like, the tank, I could have done just a cube in a game and just play with the cube, and then somebody replaces that with a tank or a horse, whatever you want.
Sure.
So the artist is at the liberty of designing. The dev can have substitute place to work one, and when they meet is in Visual Studio.
Cool.
So I think an interesting thing I'll add, as JP was saying about shaders, is, you know, it's an additional painting on top.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's simplistic shaders, which is take the texture, add some kind of special simple light to it, and you're good to go.
Mm.
But shaders can also be used to do much more advanced things.
Okay.
So a classic thing that people think about is bump mapping, where you can take a piece of data, which is a normal map in this case. Think of it as an image, but that you're using to represent height. So here I have a sphere. I have a very simple sphere. And as you see me zoom in here, you'll notice that I'm using the data to actually create a little bit of
bumps
on the surface.
Grooves.
And how that helps is as I make that into, I add a texture that is the planet, right? I merge those together. Now I have a planet with a sense that some things are mountainous versus not.
Nice.
Right? You might see that. And then you can even combine a separate, you'll notice here, you'll notice here that we have
I like that. Interesting.
Yeah. So we have here the cloud cover as a separate image that we're bringing in, and then we're merging these together, and then I can come down and move around, and you'll see that I have cloud cover. Mm. And we can even kind of show you how that might animate in real time in the designer. But that's really how HLSL can add a lot of value with great performance to a game, and that's kind of how games get these really impressive visual experiences.
It's all about fooling the eye.
Yes. This is exactly what just happened. Right? Although I'm glad the Earth doesn't actually function like that.
That might be
kind of trippy. We'd be having it'd be an interesting experience.
Probably.
Cool. So as you guys have mentioned briefly, I mean, this is all about DirectX.
Yes.
Under the covers. And what modifications did you have to do? Did you have to do any modifications to DirectX to enable this nice experience?
I mean, did you? This is vanilla DirectX because we're kind of abstracting ourselves from the platform underneath. You know, it's an asset viewer, so we support any file format for textures, PNG, TIFF, BMP, and EPS.
Okay.
So we're intentionally abstracted from how you run it and on what platform you're going to consume the assets. Mm. We prefer to be on Windows, obviously.
Well, DirectX only runs on Windows, so you're...
But your asset viewing and modification can be anywhere.
Totally, okay? Obviously.
And then we have your mesh is the same thing. You acquire FBX or OBJ files or from other source.
Uh-huh.
Modify, view them, apply to your game, but it's still achievable somewhere else. So we kind of abstract ourselves from the platform at this point, and we're able to help
now,
the dev.
There is an aspect on which we're absolutely not abstracted.
Okay.
And that is, on the one hand, our shading experience is based on HLSL, which is a DirectX language. And of course, remember earlier we talked about debugging. When it comes to debugging, you really cannot abstract yourself from a platform. Mm. The whole point is we're trying to help you debug the DirectX behavior, not whether just that the math of your game is correct, although we want to help you with that too.
Sure.
Early on I said we have these two pieces, and all the pieces we've shown you so far are these pieces that JP and I built that are in our team, that are designed for working with these kinds of assets, these shaders. We have an additional, piece to the puzzle, which is this DirectX debugging experience. So I can show you what that looks like.
That would be cool
as well. And then,
so you're going to be debugging into C then?
Yes and no. You'll
okay.
see.
Great.
It's a bit subtle. So I mentioned how when you're debugging graphics, you're sending all these commands to a GPU, and you're sending them through the DirectX API. So what you want is a way to see, well, can I step in and understand why certain things rendered the way they did? And the way we do that for you is we allow you, I've already got it saved here, so we're not going to run it in the game, but we allow you to inject yourself, right? We allow VS to be injected into your game so that it can record at any given time what occurred in a frame. A single frame of DirectX rendering.
Sweet.
And so then you can actually capture many frames. Here, this is where you see your list of frames. And I can move around this frame. I can zoom in, so I can really go look at what happened with, this specific pixel down here. I can select it and double click. And when I double click, I'll get this pixel history. Hmm. You'll notice the game's not running here. I'm just inspecting what occurred in this frame. I could even send this to JP's computer and have him look at this. So you'll notice that, here, I'll zoom out so we can see this more clearly. I'll stay on that pixel down here. And you'll notice I double click. So first we drew the screen blue. We cleared the render target. That's kind of what you do in many DirectX game.
Okay.
You first clear the screen before you start drawing all the objects that you want. Then we drew the ground. Right? Then we drew kind of a terrain above it. So we were actually using that as a background, a mountainous background. Hmm. And then, that'll teach me. There's actually a lot of events in DirectX. You'll notice here,
whoa,
this is everything that you sent to DirectX, not just the calls for that pixel. So I can jump to the bottom and go here. So we have lots of different ways of navigating this and helping you see progressively what occurred. So, even for this tank, you'll notice that there were two draw calls. It didn't get drawn in one call. So you might have had a bug that occurs in one versus the other, and half the tank came out right versus not.
Okay.
So this allows you to kind of dig in and understand why did a pixel end up a certain way. You'll notice, for example, here we'll tell you that this pixel was included, excluded, because it failed the depth test. Mm. So where it was like, here's what was there in the frame buffer, and our pixel shader came out with something that was a different color, but it was thrown out and not rendered above because it was behind the thing in question.
Okay.
So you can turn that off in DirectX. There's a lot of control over what happens in DirectX like this. So for example, you can see what kind of things you sent to DirectX with this object table. So think of all these calls in DirectX create objects. Maybe they create a mesh. Maybe they create a texture. Maybe they create some state. Mm. So if I sort by type, you'll notice we have all these buffers. That's really the majority of what you have. But see, we also have these blend states. Mm. Or we have a depth stencil state. So if I double-click on that, I can inspect it. Now, right now, this is just, I sent it to the DirectX at some point. And as I'm crawling through the debugging experience, I'll find that it was set perhaps before or after what I wanted. And you'll notice here it says depth enabled to false, which may not be what I want, which is saying ignore the depth, sort of. Okay. You might want to do that for performance. Right? That's a classic trick. You basically draw things in the order that you know is correct, mm-hmm. so that you don't ask the GPU to verify whether a pixel should be discarded, because that's actually expensive.
Okay.
Right? So that exclamation mark is an indication that you might have been able to avoid that if you drew things in a different order yourself.
Interesting.
So there's all these kinds of things you can learn as you run through this debugging experience. And we can even show you the pipeline of what occurred to your mesh. So if I go back to this event and I pick, let's say, this one, I can actually see, well, it was drawing a leaf of this tree, and this is the original mesh, and then the mesh got moved, right, through a translation, maybe even a scaling, mm-hmm. and then my viewport ended up putting it all the way at the top of the screen, based on where my camera was. And if the mesh isn't even exactly how you would expect, you can double-click it and use that same mesh inspection ability to see how this mesh was sent to the GPU. So this is, think of it as we've re-extracted out, kind of like when you look at a register in memory.
Okay.
You can say, well, I know this is a float. Let me take a look at it. Mm. Wait a second, something happened. In the same way here, you sent a branch from a tree. This is a palm tree leaf. You sent it through to the GPU, and we've recorded what exactly you sent, what list of vertices you sent. We can recreate that for you so you can inspect that, and maybe find that the original mesh is not what you were expecting, and that's where the bug might lie.
Excellent. So one question I would have for you is breakpoints.
Yeah.
So
we don't have anything at this stage. We're still definitely working on some stuff that hopefully we'll get to in beta. There's definitely a salient problem here, which is the behavior that you're trying to debug, where it could be going wrong, is inside a shader. And shaders are made of code, and you want to be able to step through them. Yeah. So we understand this is super important, and so we're trying to...
Yeah, I always seem to ask Boris.
Yeah,
Boris says this great stuff. He just showed us a killer example. And then I'll be honest with you, I don't really plan on that. Man.
No, it's good.
I don't.
You're really plugged in. It's good. These are all really good questions. And, you know, kind of JP alluded to this earlier, is that, you know, we wanted to start on a journey. Mm-hmm. You know, we think of a lot of these tools that we've built as version one.
Okay.
And we're excited, I think, to get some feedback about it as people discover, you know, Visual Studio 11.
Yeah, one of our hope is that we can lower the bar of introduction to 3D and have more people write application for Windows in 3D.
Sure.
The other way of measuring that we succeeded is that if you can stay in Visual Studio as long as you can without leaving, then we've achieved our goal of being the I in IDE.
Nice.
Integrated.
Great.
So you don't have to download another application or do some stuff you have to do externally from Visual Studio. If you can stay in Visual Studio, that means we succeeded in achieving our goal of giving you more power.
Absolutely. And I guess the final question I would ask is, this is like from the gaming perspective, you know, is one thing, but you could, you know, I could see people also using this sort of experience and model and development model experience to build non-games that take advantage of DirectX and HLSL.
Sure.
Right? You don't just have to build tanks and warriors and airplanes. I could design a UI in some new kind of way that takes advantage of these tools. And as a developer, I'm able to...
There's a lot of weather application that are 3D, where you see the
sun
and a cloud come in.
Yeah, yeah.
So you can totally do this.
Or hurricane tracking stuff, you know, real time.
Absolutely.
I think we'll feel really good if, if, because of our tools, people that would not have even thought about building their app using DirectX might say, hey, let me give this a shot.
Cool.
And by the way, if they don't want to use DirectX, they want to use a higher level kind of engine or library for doing this, which is perfectly reasonable. DirectX is very much the lowest level. There's lots of stuff, whether it's open source or other libraries that we have at Microsoft, like XNA, that allow you to write using the same principles, and the same tools will apply. You know, you'll eventually still have to write some kind of shader, and if we can help you create that visual effect for the planet, whether it's a sunny day or a rainy day, you know, and that's what you want us to do in your weather application, these same tools will hopefully help you out.
Excellent. Well, hey, great to see you again, Boris. This is really nice to see what has evolved since the last time we talked. Great to meet you, JP.
Same thing.
We'll get you on C9 again.
Okay.
Right on. Play with this, people. Now, people are watching this. Have already learned about it and seen the keynote and stuff. I'm sure the joke about Scott, which I'm sure everyone laughed about.
Yeah.
The question I would ask is, when are you going to get their hands on this? CTP? Ready to come?
CTP should be available momentarily, basically.
Right on.
It's going to be very broadly available.
Good.
Yeah.
Nice work, you guys.
It won't be hard to get.
Yes.
One thing to note is... you know, we ship an Express version of Visual Studio and a Pro version of Visual Studio.
Yes.
Most of these tools are in the Pro version of Visual Studio. So if you want to go play with them, just install. They're both freely available as CTPs.
Okay.
So we recommend you pick up the bigger and better SKU.
Right on.
And try that.
Excellent, you guys.
Hey, hope you like it.
Yeah. Thank you. Nice work.
Bye-bye.